welcome to class today. Before we begin, are there any comments, questions, concerns, or other things for me? All right, I have two announcements then. One is that on Friday, 2 days from today, one of our upper level classes is about game design and they are having a game expo. You are welcome to attend. It begins before this class begins and ends after this class ends, so you're welcome to go before or after. It's in Rice 120, you get to play games, and apparently there's door prizes or something. Anyway.
You also get to vote for me.
Yes, Sam has a game in there, so you're welcome to vote for him and rig the polls. Alright, so that's happening. The other thing to note, homework 7 has been canceled. We could not find... This is due to snow. We just had so many delays. The time for homework 7 kept getting shorter until it wasn't worth it. So, oops. So homework 6 will be your last homework. All right. Any other questions, comments, things for me? Yes?
Will we still get to see what homework 7 was?
Will you get to see what homework 7 was? No! That's not quite true. What we've done is we've taken homework 7... and we sort of reworked it into a couple of lectures. So the last couple of lectures before the review, so a week from today and then that following Friday, we will sort of go over what we would have done in homework 7 in a slightly different way. Other questions? All right. So today, we are going to discuss recursion. Which, completely unplanned, but Sam drawing a picture of me caused me to pull up my picture of me, which is actually a recursive picture. Okay? So what is recursion? Recursion is something defined in terms of itself. So this picture here is a picture of me drawing a picture of this picture. Okay? So I can define this picture in terms of this picture. This picture is me drawing a picture of this picture. And this idea of defining things in terms of themselves is going to be our topic for today. Okay, so a recursive definition is something defined in terms of itself. For example, a recursive definition is a recursive definition is a recursive definition. There's all kinds of places that show up. Recursion is a big topic in computing. So one of the first jokes that Google embedded in their search engine was if you type recursion, it will say, "Did you mean recursion?" And you click on it and you come back to this page. Right? Because it's recursive. So recursion, it's a big topic in computer science. It's a relatively small topic in this course. We'll devote 3 class periods and 1 lab to it. Largely to help you understand methods better, also to sort of lead into some of the other things. So we'll introduce it today, we'll look at some code. We'll then sort of explore what this means in practice, sort of under the hoodish a little bit on Friday, and then we'll get to draw some pictures on Monday. That's the plan. So, recursive definition. So we just saw a recursive definition. The picture was Luther drawing the picture. Okay, defines the picture in terms of itself. Let's do this instead. All right, so we can define things recursively. Recursive definitions have surprising power in computer science. So let's just jump right into some code as a way of introducing this. So let's make ourselves... let's make a method that does... How about factorial? Okay. What is the factorial of a number? N. What is the factorial of N? Who can define the factorial of N for me? Yes?
N times N minus 1 times N minus
2. Okay, so you're thinking N times N minus 1 times N minus 2 times N minus 3 times... Da, 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 da. Okay, great. What is the factorial of N minus 1? Yeah?
N minus 1.
Okay, so we have here, we know that the factorial of n is that, and we have the factorial of n minus 1 is that, okay? And then we notice that there's some very nice overlap here, which means that we can rewrite the factorial of n in terms of the factorial of n minus 1 and get rid of the dot, dot, dot. Okay? Just by the definition of factorial, I now have a recursive definition of factorial. The factorial of a number is n times the factorial of 1 less than the number. I don't need any dot, dot, dots. I don't need any loops to do the dot, dot, dot. I just have a definition in terms of itself. Okay? And I can put this directly into code. Let's make answer equals n times the factorial of n minus 1. And then we'll just return that. And ta-da! I've method almost computes the factorial. We'll see why I say almost in a moment. Okay? This is perfectly valid Java. It's okay. Java has no complaints about this code. It will even try to run it. Okay? It won't succeed in running it all the way. Let's see that. And we'll talk about why and what we need to make this work. Okay? So if I were to try to do the factorial of, oh, I don't know, how about 6? Anybody happen to know what the factorial of 6 is? Well, I guess we'll get to find out. Well, the factorial of 6 turns out to be a whole lot of errors. Many, 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 many errors all in the same line. Stack overflow error. Okay? So we'll talk about why this is an error. We're running out of memory doing this. And the reason we're running out of memory doing this is this definition isn't complete. It never stops. Okay? So, by this definition, what is the factorial of 1? It is 1 times the factorial of 0. What is the factorial of 0? 0 times the factorial of negative 1. What is the factorial of negative 1? Negative 1 times the factorial of negative 2. As we have written this, this never stops. You all said, correctly, that the factorial of 1 and 0 are both 1. But that is not what my code says. My code defines every factorial, including the factorial of negative 5,281, in terms of another factorial. It never stops. Okay? When we are writing recursive methods in any programming language, including Java, there are 3 things that we must have. Okay? They're worded slightly different ways in different times, but there are 3 things we must have. So I'm going to list them here. 3 things we must have in recursion. Okay? And I should probably spell things right because thickness just doesn't work as well. How about 3 as well? All right. The first thing we must have for it to be recursion, we must have a recursive invocation of the method itself. Okay? So, for a recursive method to be recursive, the definition of how to do that thing must include do that thing. This is what we mean by recursion for recursive methods in any programming language. They define factorial in terms of factorial, therefore it is recursive. This I have. This is an important thing. The second important thing that I must have is called the base case. Meaning, some case where we don't invoke ourselves. Okay? So we have to have some case, some situation, where I just tell you the answer. I don't define the answer in terms of myself. Some terminating condition. So, many of you said that a terminating condition for this particular example is if n is 0, then I can just return 1. Okay? There are other base cases that will also work for this. But the important piece here is that there is some case, some condition, some if, where I just am done. There's no recursive invocation. I'm just done. I'm done with my work. I have to have that base case. Otherwise, we'll get that stack overflow of running on forever. The third thing we must have is we must make progress towards the base case when we recur. Okay? So it must be the case not only that there is a base case and that there is a recursive case, but that the recursive invocation, the parameters of the recursive invocation, get us closer to the base case than we were before. So I have to define factorial n in times of a factorial that is closer to zero than where I started, such as n minus 1. If I were to define it in terms of n, this would not ever terminate, because I'm not making any progress towards that solution. So all successful recursive methods, ones that will actually run and do the right thing, in any programming language, including Java, must have these three things. And if they have these three things, they will work. And let's verify that they work. And yes, indeed, the factorial of 6 is 720. So now I've added the base case, which is what I was missing before. I could just run my method, and poof, it works. Questions about what I mean by any of these three pieces? Or anything else about what I've written so far? We're just about to add some println to see a little bit more what happens, but questions at this point? Okay. Let's look and see more what happens. So I'm just going to add a bunch of println into this method. So I'm going to say factorial of n was invoked. Okay. I can print out that we're invoking something. I'll print out that we're returning something. So in the base case, I'm about to return 1. In the other case, I'm returning the answer. Okay. Oops. So all I've done is just added 3 println here. So that every time this method is invoked, something gets printed out. Twice. Something gets printed out when we start, something gets printed out right before we return. And I'm going to run this again. And then we're going to talk about this output a little bit. Okay. I invoke factorial 6. So unsurprisingly, the first thing I see is factorial 6 was invoked. Now remember, every time I invoke a method, Java stacks on top of the previous method's memory a new sheet of memory for the new method. So main's memory existed, I stack memory on top of main for factorial 6. And then factorial 6 does what it's supposed to do. So it prints that out, it checks if n is 0, it's not. So then it invokes factorial 5, right down here on the recursive case. Factorial 5 means I need a new sheet of memory. So a new piece of memory is stacked on top of the old factorial 6's memory, and factorial 5 is invoked. So factorial 5 comes along, it prints out that factorial 5 was invoked. 5 is not equal to 0 either. So we come down here and we invoke factorial 4. So factorial 4 stacks more memory on top of this. We start getting this stack of memory. So right, we've got main's memory at the bottom, then factorial 6, then 5, then 4. 4 is going to invoke 3, which is going to invoke 2, which is going to invoke 1, which is going to invoke 0. They're all stacking up here. 0, very conveniently, is our base case. So when I invoke factorial 0, instead of stacking a new memory up there, it's going to return 1. Okay? And so we see here that it returns 1. When it returns, the method stops, meaning that entire sheet of memory comes off of the stack. And we're left with whatever was underneath it. What was underneath it was factorial 1 invoking factorial 0. So factorial 1 sort of picks up right where it left off with that 1 that was returned, multiplies it by n, which was 1, and returns 2. Sorry, it returns 1 as well. 1 times 1 is 1, right? When it returns, that sheet of memory flies off. We're back to where we were at factorial 2, which was sitting here waiting for factorial 1. We do 2 times 1, we return our 2, and the factorial 2 sheet flies off. And we're left back where we were at factorial 3, still waiting for factorial 2. It's now got its answer, and so on. So each of these things comes off one at a time as the answers sort of get returned back down the stack, and we remove the memory from this stack of memory that we had. And when we're all done, factorial 6's memory goes away, and now we're back where we started in main, and we continue with the println and print out our 720. Questions? Okay. So, this is the basic operation of recursion. I write a method in terms of itself, I make sure there's a base case in progress, And the method will work its way down and work its way back up the stack, and I'll end up with the answer that I want. Let's just see this with a different example. Let's look at, how about another int thing? Let's do the Fibonacci numbers. Anyway, just a quick poll. There's no reason you wouldn't know this in particular, but some people do. I know what the Fibonacci numbers are. I do not know what the Fibonacci numbers are. Explain them. All right, there's enough people. Let's explain the Fibonacci numbers. The Fibonacci numbers are 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34. Sorry, is that right? Yes, 34, 55, etc. Okay. 34, not 24, thank you. Okay. Meaning what? Each number in this sequence is the sum of the two numbers before it. And the first two numbers are 1. Okay? So 34 is 13 plus 21. 55 is 21 plus 34. Each number is the sum of the two numbers before it. Some guy named Fibonacci came up with this sequence way back when, and it turns out to have all kinds of cool properties, so people remember it. We're just going to use it as an example of a recursive method. Okay? We're not going to talk about what it's for. Just going to use it as an example of a recursive method. So, we're going to try to write out this definition recursively. So I just said that the nth Fibonacci number is the sum of the two before it. Okay? That's the definition of Fibonacci. That's the it's a recursive definition because it defines a Fibonacci number in terms of other Fibonacci numbers. But I know I'm going to need three things. So I know I'm going to have some sort of if case, if statement for my base case, which is going to have to return something. And then I'm going to, let's just do the same thing so I'll be able to print something easier later. And I know down in this recursive case, I'm going to have to invoke Fibonacci in some way. Okay? This is the pieces of any recursive method. Check for a base case. Do some recursive case. Return the result. So, I now just sort of need to fill in these pieces. Do we want to... I don't really care whether we start with base or recursive case. I want to start with the base case. I'm going to start with the recursive case. I don't care either. All right, nobody cares. Sam, pick one. Right. All right. Base comes earlier in the alphabet, so let's do the base case first. All right, so what's the base case here? For what numbers do I just know the answer? Let me be a little more explicit about what I want, okay? This should be the answers. What I want is you're telling me which of these numbers you're getting. And let's use the standard zero-based indexing that Java loves so much, okay? So if you give me 5, you should give... If n is 5, you should give me back 8, okay? What is a base case I can do for this problem? What's an answer I just know? When n equals 0, return 1. Great. I have a base case. How about the recursive case? Well, I just said it's the sum of the two before it. So the one before it would be n minus 1, or the Fibonacci of n minus 1. And the one before that would be the Fibonacci of n minus 2. Okay? So now I have this. Yes?
Can you make the base case equal 0? Because when you get to equal 1,
yeah, so this won't work. Why not? As you pointed out, what if n is 1? If n is 1, I'll try to define this in terms of Fibonacci 0 and Fibonacci negative 1. But Fibonacci negative 1 will try to define itself in terms of Fibonacci negative 2 and negative 3, which would define themselves in terms of negative 2, 3, negative 4, negative 5, and so on. And this base case is too small. Okay? It does not handle the case where n equals 1. So let's just handle the case where n equals 1. When n equals 1, what's the answer? Answer is also 1. Okay? Is this big enough? What if n was 2? If n was 2, our recursive case would call n of 1 and n of 0. We have code to handle both of those, so I think this will be big enough. We'll see in a moment ways of sort of drawing pictures of this and figuring out if it's actually enough or not. We may not do that for Fibonacci because it'll be ugly. But anyway, but the idea here is because at one point I'm going down 1 and at one point I'm going down 2, I'm going to handle sort of down 1 and down 2, both as base cases. I can do that a lot simpler, though. I could just say less than or equal to 1. I make my code shorter. So I'm going to, just for the sake of keeping code short, keeping things on the screen. Okay? So now I have my Fibonacci defined. And let's see if it works. So let's do the Fibonacci of, let's do 9. 9 should be 55, right? Yikes, I should put that inside the parentheses. Okay, and I see that indeed it gives me my 55. So I've just encoded into Java the mathematical definition of what's going on and found the right base case. If I had done n equals equals 0, it would run forever. Okay? It is not a sufficiently large base case. So finding the right base case is not always trivial, although usually it's not too bad. And a lot of what we're going to see in this class, there's just a single base case that's pretty easy to discover. Let's just, for kicks and giggles, let's put these same println in Fibonacci. Okay? So I will print out when Fibonacci is invoked, I will print out when it is returning 1, and I'll print out when it's returning something other than 1. Okay. And let's start this with let's ignore that one for the moment. Let's start this with a nice small number. Okay? I run Fibonacci of 2, and 2 gets invoked. And what does 2 need to do to solve its problem? It needs to invoke Fibonacci of n minus 1, which is 1. So I see that Fibonacci of 1 is invoked. And that happens right on this line right here. That's going to be 1. And it returns 1. And then we also invoke Fibonacci of 0. And it returns 1. And we add those together and we return 2. Okay? So there's sort of these two recursive calls going on there. If I do 3, things get ugly quickly in this particular code. 3 needs to know the answer of 2 and 1. So 3 is going to call 2. And then 2 needs to know 1 and 0. So 2 is going to call 1 and 1 is going to return. 2 is going to call 0 and 0 is going to return. 2 is done now. But 3 has only called 2. It still has to call 1 as well. So 3 isn't going to call 1 and 1 is going to return. So I see both 2 and 3 both called 1. Okay? And this just happens. We put memory on the stack. We take it off. Java just does exactly what we said. There's a lot of work going on here. And it gets big fast. Okay? So if I do Fibonacci 6, for example, there's a lot of things going on. Because 6 is calling 5 and 4. But 5 is also calling 4 and 3. And 4 is calling 3 and 2. And we get lots of cases where right, 6 puts 5 on the stack, which puts 4, which puts 3, which puts 2, which puts 1, which puts 0. 0 comes off. 1 comes off. Then we put another 0 on for 2. And then that 0 comes off and the 2 comes off. And then a 3 goes on and so on. And we just have this sort of dancing behavior, things going on and off and on and off the stack as each new method puts 2 things on and pulls them off. We'll walk a little bit more about how all this weird magic happens here on Friday, but I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any at this point. Yes?
You don't need a recursion to do like that.
You do not need a recursion to do Fibonacci. A great lead into my next point. You never need recursion. Okay? Anything that you can do with a loop, you can do with recursion. Anything you can do with recursion, you can do with a loop. They are equally expressive. However, they aren't always equally easy. Okay? So yes, Fibonacci and factorial are both easy to do with loops. We can do them with loops with no problem at all. But we can always trade between loops and recursion, and sometimes it's easier to do recursion. In particular, it's easier to do recursion when we're splitting problems into pieces. We'll see some more of that a little bit later on. But let's see an even clearer example of that. Okay, I don't need to. Let's do a public static int sum. Let's do a sum of a list, okay? So I'm going to give some list. And let's say I want to sum all the elements from I to the end of the list. So ignore the first I elements and then sum the rest of them. That's the goal of this method. And we're going to do this recursively, and then we're also going to do it with a loop and compare how these two work. So, what is the easiest list to sum its values? The easiest possible list to know the sum of all the things inside of it. Zero. Is zero a list? Multiple zeros? We can get easier than multiple zeros. How about an empty list? Okay? If I give you a list of three things and I say sum up everything that comes after position three, the answer is just zero. You don't even have to look at the list, right? So we're going to make our base case be the easiest thing we can think of, which is there's nothing to do. If the list's length, I should say if I is greater or equal to the list's length, if I'm trying to look at things that are off the end of the list, the answer is just zero. Okay? Easy. There's my base case. Trivial answer. I know the answer always. In any other case, what I'm going to say is the sum of the elements in the list, sum of the thing at the first spot, plus the sum of the rest of the list. Okay? So I'm going to make my answer equal to the thing in the first spot plus the sum of the rest of the list. Okay? It's a simple definition. It's a stupid definition, perhaps, but it's a working definition. Okay? And to see that it's a working definition, let's actually make ourselves a list. Oh, and let's put in it 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, 9, 2, 6, 5, 3, 5. That's probably enough. Okay. So we put some values in our list. And then let's find out what the sum of that is. So I want the sum of my list starting, let's start at position 0. And I see it says it's 44, and you can add them up. And so you've got 4, 8, 9, 14, 23, 25, 31, 36, 39, 44. Great, got it right. Okay. So what's it doing? It's just saying, I'm not at the end of the list yet, so sum up the rest of the list and add the first thing to it. Over and over again, that's all this code does, right? What are the pieces here? I've got a base case of I'm at the end of the list. I've got a recursive case of invoking the sum again. The recursive case is making progress by moving me closer to the end of the list. And then I'm actually doing the work. So I get a reasonable answer out of it. I could just as easily, perhaps even easier, do this by a loop. Okay? So let's make another one called sum loop. Okay? And how do I do this with a loop? I'm going to make my answer start off at 0, and then for int j equals I, j is less than list.length, j plus equals 1, answer plus equals lists of j, return my answer. Okay? These two methods do the same thing in almost exactly the same way. They're just written in different ways. Okay? Both of them have we start with 0, we add everything in the list to 0. Both of them look at everything one at a time. One of them does it with a loop, meaning by keeping some variable and changing the value in that box over and over and over again. The other one does it with recursion, meaning we keep putting a new chunk of memory on top of the stack to keep track of where we're looking and where we've already looked. No variables are being changed in value in the recursive method, but on the other hand, we only have one invocation in the looping method. Questions, comments, concerns? Yes? Which is faster, recursion or loops? In almost every case, loops are. Okay? There's just less work to do. Invoking methods takes time. So to run it, loops are almost always faster. Frequently, writing the recursion and writing it correctly is easier to do than writing the loops. So it's frequently a good idea to write the recursive code, even though the loop code will typically run faster when you run it. Okay, I have said what I absolutely want to say about recursion today. That has taken about 27 minutes of our time. That is all we've given to recursion so far, so I'm interested in what you have questions about. So take a moment, turn to whoever is sitting next to you, come up with some questions. I'll field those questions. Depending on how much time is left, we'll make some amount of more progress into the material. So take a moment, come up with any questions you may have about recursion. Questions we have? Yes?
Do you want to revisit the turtle recursion you did, like?
All right, I will just write down these questions. We'll answer them later. Will we revisit trees and turtles? Other questions? Yes?
Why do you think more equations are better?
Why are loops faster?
It looks like, at least to me, the recursion takes up a lot of space in the memory. Is there any instance in which a recursion would be faster in memory than a loop?
Does recursion ever use less memory than a loop? Is there a third alternative, neither recursion or loop? Any other questions? Okay. Will we revisit trees and turtles? Yes. Probably on Monday. Maybe on Friday, depends on how fast we go on Friday. We'll look at other kinds of graphical recursion there as well. Hooray, that was easy. Why are loops faster? Keeping track of the stack of memory takes work. This is a very approximate answer, but it covers a lot of the right answer. Stacking memory on top of the stack and taking it off and remembering where we were and going back to where we were, all of that stuff takes work. So does updating variables and checking to see if they're less than something. But updating variables and checking to see if they're less than something takes a lot less work. So there's some work associated just with using methods in any context, and there's a lot of method calls in recursion. Does recursion ever use less memory than a loop? Less memory than a loop. This is going to be a weak answer. Pretty much, no. It is always possible to write non-recursive code that uses less memory than recursive, or uses no more memory than the recursive code does. You can always do that. Doing that is not always easy. So there are some cases where sort of the obvious way to solve the problem as a loop uses more memory than the obvious way to solve the problem in recursion. But even those are pretty rare. Usually it just is slower and uses more memory. It uses more of your computer's resources. In return, it may make it easier to solve the problem. So usually it's just sort of a generally more expensive for your computer trade-off. There are ways around that. There are also, so the Java compiler doesn't do this, but there are some compilers that will take recursion and turn it into loops for you without telling you it did it. There's all kinds of optimizations that can be done. Sometimes recursion can even be solved at compile time and we don't have to run the code at all. There's all kinds of interesting things that go on there. But in general, it's just more expensive in both time and memory. Is there a third alternative? Neither recursion than loops. Yes. But they are unusual. There's all kinds of weird things that are true about computers. It turns out that if you only have the subtraction operator and variable updates, you can do anything that can be done. Period. It just is really, really hard. There are things called SK combinators, and there are things called functors and applicative languages, and there's lots of solutions here that are not based on these. But between recursion and loops is at least 99% of code out in the wild, and maybe way more than that. It's very rare to see any of the other alternatives besides recursion or loops for repeating something. Maybe when we speak any more about any of those questions or to field some additional questions. Okay, let's talk now then a little bit about how do you look at recursive code and decide what it does. So let me make here how do we draw diagrams of what is happening in recursion? We could draw all of the memory activation records and all the numbers of the variables with standard boxes and arrows diagrams. But because we keep removing things from the stack, that gets ugly really fast. And it takes a huge amount of space. So a common way of doing this, actually let's do factorial. The common way of doing this is what's called rewrite rules, okay? So if I want to know what is the factorial of 6, I'm just going to rewrite factorial of 6 in terms of what factorial of 6 returns. So factorial 6 is going to return 6 times factorial 5. Okay? So I'm just going to write here 6 times factorial 5. Okay? That's what factorial 6 means. But now I've got another factorial, so I'm just going to do that again. Factorial 5 means 5 times factorial 4. Okay? And, well, factorial 4 happens to mean... Now, usually we get lazy here and we stop writing all the details. Okay, so I'm going to get lazy here and stop writing all the details. 4 means 4 times factorial 3, and 3 means 3 times factorial 2. Sorry, 3 times factorial 2. And I can just keep doing this all the way up until I get to some number that I know the answer to. And we set our factorial stops when we get to 0. Okay, so this up here is just going to give me my 1. Okay, so I just keep replacing, rewriting the piece that looks like a method call with its result. And so if I had not been lazy, I would have had every step along the way here. I would have had the entire expression, and what I've done, I will end up with just the actual answer. Okay? So I can do this, and I can just get what the answer is just by continually rewriting the recursive invocation with its result. There are all kinds of names for this. Rewriting, there are strange names like contextual small spec semantics and things that just don't really matter. But there's names for this process. This will give me the right result. I look at some code, I can figure out what it does. This is a good way of analyzing your own code. Okay? If I had written Fibonacci and we had not have pointed out to us that I didn't have a base case for n equals 1, when I would try this, let's actually try that. If I write fib 4, okay, I would realize that fib 4 is rewritten as fib 3 plus fib 2. Okay, that's what fib 4 means. And then I'd rewrite both of those. So fib 3 is the same thing as fib 2 plus fib 1. And fib 2 is the same thing as fib 1 plus fib 0. Okay? And then in my original code, I would have turned fib 0 into 1. But I have turned fib 1 into fib 0 plus fib negative 1. Okay? I have done that for both of those. And we've turned this, fib 2 goes into fib 1 plus fib 0. Okay? And as I were, if I were to continue this on up, I would see that this will not stop. Okay? And that would be fib negative 2 plus fib negative 3. And you could just do this rewrite rule over and over again and find out what the answer is. And if it doesn't stop, then you did something wrong, right? And you will notice, oh, it doesn't make sense here. I've got negative numbers. Why do I have negative numbers? Where did they come from? And if we sort of space things out so we sort of see where everything came from, okay, we could sort of line things up a little bit to figure out where the error entered our code, right? And we can come up with some understanding that our problem occurred when fib 1s turned into fib negative 1s. So there are ways of using this to sort of error check what you're doing, make sure it makes sense. And lining things up can help. If you're having trouble with recursion, this might be a good idea. If you're just trying to analyze what recursion does, this also might be a good idea, because if you don't have an error, you'll actually get the answer. This is one way of looking at recursion on paper and figuring out what it does, or in your head and figuring out what it does. There is another... Yes, question?
Why didn't the factorial code stop negative?
Why didn't it stop? Because I was pretending like we were still using the old version that only had 0 as a base case, did not have 1 as a base case. So the one we actually ran doesn't do this, right? The one we actually ran had a base case of both 0 and 1. Okay? And so if we have a base case of both 0 and 1, then we would not have these negative 1s.
I was wondering about factorial.
Factorial. What's wrong with factorial?
Like, why does it have stopped
at probably something negative? Why does factorial stop? Factorial stops because I have written right here, if n equals 0, return 1. So factorial of 0 becomes 1. Yes, it is this statement right here. I guess I'm not understanding the question. The return statement, yes, the return statement will take something off of the stack and start its other way back down. Yep. Okay. Other questions here? All right. There's another way of diagramming recursion, figuring out what it does. Some people prefer the other way, which is instead of rewriting, we can make a table. Okay? So I can make a fib, I can make a table that compares n to Fibonacci of n. And then I can just start filling in the table. What if I run 0, what will Fibonacci of n do? It'll give me 1. If I do 1, it will also give me 1. If I do 2, then it will do fib of 1 plus fib of 0, which equals 1 plus 1, which equals 2. Okay? And then I can just start filling in my table. If I do 3, that's 2 and 1. I see I know what 2 gives me, it gives me 2. I know what 1 gives me, it gives me 1. Right, so I know that this is going to give me 2 plus 1, which is 3. And I can just start filling it in as I go. Okay? So that will give me 3 and 2, which will give me 5, and so on. Some people like the table better. Some people like the crossing things out better. It doesn't matter. They will both tell you what the answer is. You can also just run the code, or some people just look at it and see what it does. Any of these are fine, but these two diagramming techniques can help you out. Any questions about these ideas? Okay. Let's do one more idea here. I'm going to ask a question here that you didn't, but I think it's a good question. How can we come up with the recursive statement? In other words, how is it that I know that I can sum a loop by the sum of a list is the first element plus the sum of the rest of the list? How do I come up with that initial step, that initial piece? And there's a bunch of ways of doing this, but the one I usually suggest that will work in most cases is, say, you actually ask yourself, how do you make progress? So you say, what is the smallest thing I can do that helps in some way? Okay? What is the smallest thing I can do that would help me make progress towards a solution? So, let's take sorting a list. If I have a gigantic stack of things that need to be sorted, and I want you to do the absolute minimum work that is still helpful, what is that smallest thing you could possibly do that will be helpful in sorting this list? There are multiple correct answers. I'm happy to take any of them. I want to sort a list. What's one small thing I can do that is actually helpful, but not very big? Yeah?
Find the smallest value.
All right, so for sorting, I could say find the smallest value is helpful. Okay? Then the question is, what's left? If you find the smallest value, what's left for me to do? Put it in front. All right, we'll put that here as well. And sort the rest of the list. Okay? After I put something in front, what's left is sorting the rest of the list. You grabbed one thing and put it in the right spot, the rest of the list is still unsorted. This is my recursive case, right? Sorting the rest of the list, doing the rest of the work, is the recursive case. The small thing is progress. And then base case is usually it is empty, we're at zero, or at some case where we know the answer, we're sort of as small as we can get. And that's the base case. So, my time is up. On Thursday, tomorrow, in lab, you will have a chance to write a few recursive methods. Let me point out before we do this, until I've got a minute here, we saw CodingBat earlier. Okay? If you go to CodingBat, they have two entire sections on writing recursion. Okay? I would encourage you, if you have some spare time, and make some spare time, go there and play around with them. Try out a few of them. Get your hand in this. You'll do some in lab tomorrow as well. We'll talk about them a few more times, but they will show up on the test. So, there we go. I will see you all on Friday.